Mike Pence walks out. Senate candidates compare the size of their war chests. That plus Trump approval numbers and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 13th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Mike Pence walked out of the Colts game in protest after some players knelt during the national anthem. Pence attended the game in Indianapolis as the Colts honored legendary quarterback Peyton Manning. But the vice president never got to see that ceremony. He left before the game started because he tweeted he would not, quote, dignify any event that, in his words, disrespects soldiers, the flag, or the anthem. President Trump tweeted that Pence walked out on his orders, and some pool reporters suggested the walkout was pre-planned because they were told Pence wouldn't stay long at the game. The estimated cost of Pence's walkout is nearly $250,000. Was Pence's walkout a legitimate protest or a costly stunt? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Katzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, would perception of this be a different story if it weren't taxpayer money that had been used?
Absolutely. I mean, this was clearly a political stunt designed to raise money. They had put it out there. They had told the press corps to wait in the car because they weren't going to be there long. They knew 49er players would kneel during the national anthem. It was clearly a stunt, and it's obvious. And having taxpayers pay $250,000 so that they can raise funds is really a shame, and they ought to be embarrassed. And frankly, Donald Trump ought to reimburse the taxpayers for that $250,000.
Reaction to this, obviously from the left, was what you would expect, but there were some folks on the right, conservative columnists, pundits, etc., who didn't view this favorably either. Do you think that the Pence and Trump team regret this?
No, I think, well, one, because they're winning, right? Public opinion is clearly on their side. Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, had to come out this week and say, look, we're all going to stand because they're losing money, they're losing viewership. So I think the public, or at least the NFL viewing public, supports the vice president's position on this. I think John Katzenberger, a couple weeks ago, we talked about this last time, rightly, I think, in my opinion, criticized the fans who are booing at the start of the game and then cheering for the same guys who are kneeling 3 hours later when they're catching the game-winning, you know, touchdown or interception. So if you agree with that, Mike Pence might be the most intellectually honest guy in the building, right? Because he did protest, and when they knelt, in 5 or 6 days after Vegas, even when we were trying to praise first responders for their efforts there, these guys are still kneeling, and he gets up and walks out. So the original question, yeah, I think it was completely legitimate, and we know what the president and vice president's position is on this.
We know, and we also know that they use taxpayer money to try to advance that position for their own money in their own campaign. That's what's reprehensible about this.
I don't think anyone's worse at raising campaign money than Donald Trump. I mean, has anyone done a worse job in modern presidential history than raising money than Donald Trump?
I will say that. That was the most incredible spin. I'm going to have to go see a chiropractor after this.
Exactly.
That is just a fact.
Is the story here more about the fact that it was taxpayer money than whether or not the protest was legitimate or not?
It's easy to, when you have numbers that you can attach to it and quantify the, insert word here, hypocrisy or the showmanship, and say it costs $250,000, well, then it's easier to discuss, and you do have a tangible number. I think what some people find still odd, perhaps, is when we have so many other things going on in the world right now that probably warrant our attention and certainly the attention of our elected leaders, this probably isn't, whether or not the expenditure is warranted, and I would probably argue it's not, but it does tend to divert the focus, which may actually be part of the intention as well.
Anything accomplished, they probably do want diversion.
Mike O'Brien brought up what you'd said a couple weeks ago, which is, you know, it seems a little silly to boo him 1 second and cheer that same player 3 hours later. Mike Pence didn't do that here. He went there, he
he saw this protest and he said, no, I'm not going to honor
you
that.
You want
I'm
me to confirm that, that this is the most intellectually honest action in the whole thing? No. look, this whole thing, and by the way, thank you, Mike.
Yeah,
I appreciate
right.
that. Here, I'll pay you after the show. The whole thing has gotten beyond goofy right now. And I think that's unfortunate because the original protest that was done back in the preseason of 2016 by a San Francisco 49er was about injustice, police brutality, you know, those issues, big issues. It's lost. That issue is completely lost, and now it's whether or not you're patriotic. And that's just baloney. In a country that celebrates, allegedly, its diversity, that was founded as a rebel nation against oppression, it seems so weird to be talking about whether or not you are this or this because you do or don't stand during the national anthem. That's nuts. So this whole thing is just beyond goofy. It's being used by everybody except for the people who originally said, we need to protest this. I'm going to use the platform. I'm going to kneel respectfully during the national anthem to bring attention to this. They're the only ones in this thing that are intellectually honest to get right down to the bottom line. The rest of us are all using it for our own purposes, whatever they may be, and none of them are really productive.
Which may be more of a disparagement of the flag and what it stands for than anything
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. I would agree with that.
Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly and GOP Senate hopefuls Luke Messer and Todd Rokita announced their latest fundraising numbers this week.
Donnelly, the at-risk incumbent, brought in $1.3 million in the 2017 third quarter, the period during which he officially launched his re-election campaign. That total leaves him with $4.6 million cash on hand as he gears up to defend his seat. Congressman Luke Messer, one of six active Republicans vying to challenge Donnelly, raised $735,000 in the last quarter and reports over $2.4 million in the bank. Last week, State Representative Mike Braun made a big move in the race by raising $1 million in the quarter, $800,000 of which was his own money.
Now, Mike O'Brien, from today, we find that Todd Rokita raised about $435,000 for the quarter, which brings him basically even with Luke Messer in terms of cash on hand. So, between Luke Messer and Todd Rokita, is one of them happier than the others right now?
No, I think they're both in a good position. Luke Messer had a good quarter. Todd Rokita outraised Messer in the second quarter, 2-1, and then Messer came back and did a really good job kind of transitioning out of kind of that traditional institutional PAC money that members of Congress often have access to, and started tapping into a statewide network of individual donors. So he should be happy. He had a really good quarter. They're neck and neck. Who shouldn't be happy, I think, is Joe Donnelly. He was outraised by the Republicans. Our money gets split two or three ways. When a Republican dollar is contributed to this race, it gets split two or three ways. Republicans outraised Joe Donnelly. And if you look at the top Democrat races in the country, Joe Donnelly's in last place in the money that he's raising. He's lowest in cash on hand. He's the only guy in the country that was outraised by Republicans, too. So I think just for Republicans in general, it was a really good quarter for us coming into the end of the year.
Should Joe Donnelly be concerned?
Joe Donnelly has $4.6 million. On hand, $4.6 million, which dwarfs whatever the heck the three midgets raised together. And the irony of this is when the primary is over, they're going to be broke. They're going to spend all their money attacking each other between now and the primary next May. And they're going to be broke, and they're going to be indebted to the Koch brothers and all the other special interests who are going to run in here and try to pick the senator from Indiana for the Republican Party. So I think Joe Donnelly's in a very good position because the two leading candidates there try to cozy up as much as they can to Donald Trump, whose numbers are plummeting. And by the time they come up for election, not in the primary, I think that it helps them in the primary. In the general, it's going to be fatal.
She just referenced they'll be broke by the end of the primary. I don't know if that's true, but in a race in which Joe Donnelly is considered one of the most vulnerable senators in the country next fall, and with the amount of outside money we're expecting to flow into this race in the general election, will it really matter as much how much money the Republican candidate, whoever they may be, comes out of the primary with?
You know, they'll have the resources at the end, and Ann knows that they'll have the resources that they need for the general election. But the bigger concern, if you're a Republican, is what damage they do to each other's reputations and what they lay out for Donnelly then to attack on his own. You know, if they flay each other in the primary, then all Donnelly has to do is fry them up and eat them.
They're not going to wait till the primary.
Well, that's true.
They've already
started
that, haven't they?
it feels like a lot of times this far ahead of whenever an election is, whether it's the primary or the general, a lot of these numbers, it's about perception. It's are you doing enough to be considered still in the game? Have they both done their job in that respect?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, these numbers show that these are legitimate candidates, not that we doubted that. We assumed that they would have the resources that they wanted and needed to disseminate their messages. And I don't see anything in the numbers that would say otherwise. I kind of long for the old simple days when you'd look at the numbers and the one with the biggest amount actually was a good thing rather than sort of reading into it like, well, being ahead isn't really good because, you know, on a full moon, you actually raised more under the... I mean, you can read so much into these numbers. What is it Mark Twain said about statistics
lies,
and lies?
Lies, and
lies? I think I'd rather still be the one with the most money on hand at this point.
Call me
old-fashioned.
Well, a new survey this week suggests President Trump's approval numbers have taken a big hit in the Hoosier state since he took office in January.
The Morning Consult poll showed President Trump's approval rating at more than 55% in January, compared to just 33% of Hoosiers who disapproved of the Republican. Those numbers have largely been on the decline since then. Trump's approval rating in Indiana now stands at just below 50% as of September, while nearly 45% disapprove. That puts Indiana about middle of the pack in the country for Trump's approval, and it's one of 22 states in which more people approve than disapprove of the president's job performance.
John Schwanisar, are Hoosiers really souring on Donald Trump?
Well, I'm hesitant to put too much stock in polls after the performance of most every pollster in the country last November in predicting the outcome of the presidential race. But I think certainly if you look at what the consistency within these numbers done by different polling outfits, the answer would be yes, they are souring. But that's not different really from any other state. In fact, Morning Consult, which had looked at I think upwards close to 500,000 adults that had been interviewed in recent months showed that there's not a state in the country where there hasn't been a drop, significant
drop.
In some states, of Trump's approval rating. So if Indiana didn't have a sizable drop, there would be something. I mean, I don't think there's something different blood in Hoosier, coursing through Hoosier's veins. So I think it is safe to say that it's down, perhaps significantly, double digits, as some polls suggest.
I think it's honest, common sense blood pumping through Hoosier veins. John, this is not unusual for a new president. The numbers usually go down unless they have just the greatest first few months in office or a war. So... And if you're Republican Party leaders in this state who are tying a lot to the president's performance in terms of how your candidates might do, are you worried?
I think so. Your analysis is correct about numbers and the volatility, especially early in a term. But the difference here is the tenor and tone, the feel of the presidency, if you will. This is a very different presidency than we've ever experienced. And... you know, his willingness to say things that any other president has always hedged or thought better of saying, his willingness to attack, in John McCain's case, someone who's battling a terminal cancer, or his heroism in the war, a Gold Star family. He's taken on all kinds of things that would have been considered sacred cows in the past. And so I think that's the difference. And I think these polls reflect an uneasiness that people have with his behavior and the way he's conducted himself in his first 8 months, 9 months in office.
In the last 24 hours, President Trump announced that he will not pay out the subsidies in the Affordable Care Act scheme to insurance companies that help keep the costs for individuals down. Is that the sort of thing that might have another impact on these numbers? Quite frankly, though, Hoosiers keep voting for people who say they want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, so is it really going to hurt?
I took that poll again. A lot of people, for example, covered by HIP 2.0 don't understand that it's the Affordable Care Act that is giving them coverage. Same is true in West Virginia and Kentucky when you interview people. They may not know it's the Affordable Care Act, but they're going to know when it's gone. And when he undermines the subsidies, he's not only taking health care away from, I think the last estimate I heard was 6 million people, but in addition to that...
What? Even more, 7 million.
7 million, okay. In addition to that, the premiums for everyone else are going to go up. And they're going to lay that right on his door, because he was not going to just repeal it. Remember, he was going to replace it with something that was going to be better and cost less. He's completely incompetent. That realization is dawning on people. His temperament is completely unsuitable for the presidency. He doesn't bother to educate himself about the issues. He flies off the handle left and right, and he is just the kind of volatile and uncivil person who embarrasses this country internationally. And I think people are beginning to understand that the persona that they laughed at when he was campaigning is the real Donald Trump, and he cannot be contained, and that is frightening.
On the issue of the subsidies, this Trump move is ostensibly to put more pressure on Congress to say, you need to, you know, either repeal and replace and come up with something completely new, or at least you have to appropriate the money for these subsidies, which he says isn't there right now. So he's putting the onus on Congress, but if Congress doesn't deliver and people are left with skyrocketing premiums, are they going to blame Congress or are they going to blame Donald Trump?
There'll be plenty of blame to go around, but I think if you look at just the subsidy issue, there's two things at play here. It's very similar to when he punted DACA to Congress and said you've got 6 months. It's because in that case they were worried about a constitutional challenge, and I think on both sides of the aisle people were concerned about that, and so Congress needs to act on that. That's still pending, obviously. With the subsidies, a federal court had already said they were illegal. And so that's why the Trump administration acted on this in the way they did. Now, it's been reported, just like DACA, that this is immediate. The withdrawal of the subsidies is immediate. Insurance companies anticipated this. In Indiana, they did, and they did in many states, and built this into the premiums for 2018. So this will be a debate that takes place over the next 14 months, really, on what has Congress done with the subsidies? What is the structure of these policies for the 2019 plan year, not the 2018 plan year that we're entering? So there's plenty of time to fix these things. And remember, on the back to the poll numbers, just really quick. His numbers, I don't think 60% of Hoosiers went to the polls and said, "I love Donald Trump." A lot of them went to the polls. Don't forget, and elections aren't a vote of no confidence in the person that's in charge. They're a vote that is relative to someone else. And the Democratic Party is going far left right now. They have far left candidates all over the country, which is why it's not a foregone conclusion that Republicans can't grow our majorities in Congress next year.
Oh, that is a far cry from where you were 6 months ago when you were saying with a 20-point lead in Indiana, Republicans couldn't be stocked. They were going to sweep everything. Now it's they may not lose control. That's interesting.
That's pretty unfair,
approach.
Man. I can't be held responsible for what I said 6 months ago.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, how much stock should people put into a poll showing President Trump's approval rating is below 50% in Indiana? A, a lot, B, a little, or C, none at all? Last week's question, is Mike Braun a serious threat to beat Todd Rokita and Luke Messer in the Senate GOP primary? 63% say yes, he is. 37% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana State Senator Jim Merritt this week said the current criminal justice system isn't working to address the opioid crisis, and he announced a series of proposals to dramatically increase penalties for certain drug and gun crimes.
The General Assembly rewrote its criminal code in recent years to drive more nonviolent, mostly drug offenders out of the prison system and into local treatment programs. And part of that was by giving judges more discretion in sentencing to be able to decide what's best for an individual offender. Republican Senator Jim Merritt wants to undo some of that, saying the court system has broken down. Merritt will propose a mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years for anyone who deals drugs that contain fentanyl, an opioid linked to a spike in overdose deaths. Merritt says he also wants to bar judges from reducing sentences for anyone who uses a gun in the commission of a crime.
John Katzenberger, Jim Merritt says the criminal code rewrite was a different time. That happened
2 years ago.
3 to 4 years ago. Does the strategy now need to change?
Well, I'll leave that to the wisdom of the legislature, but I have a hard time seeing the legislature seeing that wisdom. How's that for going around the barn? That's almost as bad as Mike earlier, isn't it? But the truth is they spent a lot of time considering what they think they should do with the criminal code. Are there changes or enhancements or some adjustments that can be made? Maybe. But for Senator Merritt to call for these big changes, it's understandable. He's a county chairman of a party, of the Republican Party. And, you know, he's got more constituencies in that regard than he had before as just the senator of a district. So he's probably sending a message out to those folks, and I understand that. But I don't think the legislature is going to make wholesale changes. I think they're going to look at this holistically because that's what the governor's asked them to do. And I think that's the approach they're going to continue to make.
Since the criminal code was passed, some lawmakers, particularly pushed by the Prosecutors Association, have been trying to creep some of these things back up to where they were, or in some cases even surpass them. Keeping that in mind, is this perhaps just too big a jump at one time to be taken seriously?
I would think so, and in many ways it seems to be out of sync with the best practice or the conventional wisdom that we see in state houses across the country, which is the opioid crisis is at its core a public health issue. It is an addiction. It is a disease. And if someone is unfortunate enough to have his or her life upended by this addiction, the threat of a mandatory minimum prison sentence probably doesn't matter because that suggests that everybody's acting rationally anyway, because if they were acting rationally, they probably would not have become addicted. And so it seems that we've already seen as a nation we can't imprison our way out of by declaring war on drugs and treating it like it's a military campaign. So this does seem to be a bit out of sync with best practice right now.
That said, Jim Merritt's message is an easy one for people to digest, which is what we've done isn't working, the opioid crisis is terrible, and we have to lock up the bad guys. So in that way, can it be effective?
I think what Jim Merritt's trying to do is solve a local problem. He's a Marion County legislator. He's the Marion County GOP chairman. He's looking at local circumstances. When the legislature passed the complete rewrite, it took him 4 or 5 years. Representative Greg Stirwald really led the way on that, and it was tough. I mean, he had to get buy-in from all over the state,
yep,
a lot of different interest groups, and it was very complicated, and it's working. But I get what Jim Merritt's saying. He has very local circumstances where gun violence is skyrocketing in Indianapolis. Witnesses know that the people that are committing these crimes are going to be back in their communities relatively soon, and so they're reluctant to come forward. So I think he's trying to solve what's a very local problem.
What he's trying to do is get publicity. That's what he's trying to do, plain and simple. It has no merit at all. If you look at what the states in the region...
I think it has a lot of merit.
Also misspelled, if that's the case. But in the states in our region, there's only one state with penalties that are higher than ours. We're either higher or the same as all the other states in the region as far as this is concerned. And there's nothing unique about this. The point that the governor is trying to address is the point that's been missing in this state, and that is treatment. And that's what we have to do, and that's what the emphasis has to be. And if you're worried about the gun violence, then maybe we should have some sensible gun control in Indiana. God forbid. I don't see Jim Merritt proposing that. Do you?
I agree with you. The Governor Holcomb is on the right track here. He really focused on the right priorities.
Republican U.S. Senate candidate Mark Hurt put out a campaign ad this week that pokes fun at his fellow Republicans.
Hurt's ad has some fun with mispronunciations and mix-ups of the names of the two leading candidates, Congressman Todd Rokita and Luke Messer.
Tom Rokita is officially entering his race for a U.S. Senate seat. Tom Rokita.
And Representative Mike Messer.
Hi, I'm Mark Hurt.
The Kokomo attorney joined the Senate race in February, though his fundraising numbers pale in comparison to so-called top-tier candidates like Rokita, Messer, and Mike Braun.
Mike O'Brien, does this come off as playful or petty?
I think it comes off as playful. I mean, he's trying to get attention when you don't have a lot of money. And I've been in campaigns like that, and I've actually kind of done videos like this. One for Todd Rokita in 2006, so we didn't have a lot of money.
Please. So, yeah. Do you like this ad? Is this a good one?
It's hokey. I mean, it's completely hokey and petty. Does it get his name out there a little bit? Yes. He's pro-life. He's pro-family. He's pro-gun. He's pro-it. You know, great. I mean, slogan after slogan after slogan, that's all it is.
We talked about the Mike Messer thing on this show. Do you think you might see something like that, though, in an ad from somebody like Todd Rokita and not a second-tier candidate?
Better music and better editing?
A little more production value?
Sure, yeah.
I think it touches a nerve,
you know, and I think that if it gets down to it, and I expect them to use all of their ammunition in the primary, yes, the answer is yes.
Do you think we might see a little more of this from some of the more serious candidates, if you will?
Well, it might behoove everyone to maybe have a little comedic relief, just to give everybody a bit respite from the rather tense times that we've seen in this campaign thus far.
Well, finally, before he left the Colts game last Sunday, Mike Pence tweeted out a photo of him and his wife Karen in Colts gear, only the photo was from a 2014 game. And Delaney, is this some sloppy staff work from the Vice President's office?
There's no question. I mean, they had this whole thing staged. This is obvious that it was all staged, and they didn't even wait to get a current photograph. I mean, you look at this and say, wow.
Does this almost undercut the point of the protest when folks can point to this and go, boy, that was stupid?
The Colts almost went to the Super Bowl that year. I think the Pence family was just trying to remember a better time in Colts.
They won on Sunday.
Very good, Mike.
Two words for this. Fake news.
Yes,
that tweet. That fake news. All right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.